Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Thanks to Jenny Green for getting us to the end of the week. It is Friday, the 16th of April, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Alan Conley and Fergal Brennan are with us to talk football as Mourinho and Ancelotti go head-to-head tonight.
I think it's a privilege for the Premier League to have Carlo back, and I just love Carlo. I think he's a fantastic guy, so I'm going to break the rules and I'm going to hug him because I like Carlo very much.
It's always a pleasure to meet Jose. We have a good friendship. When you see a friend, it's always a pleasure. For us and for them, we are fighting for the European position. So who is able to win this game is going to have more chance to be in Europe next season.
Right, well, we'll be keeping an eye on the line as well in that game. So we might have had GAA yet, but it's Clare versus Tip this weekend with Irish interest in the AFLW final.
Dangerous position, sock it off the deck, he's good. Eilish Considine gets the opening goal. He's fourth again, handball over the top. Considine for 2 in 2 minutes.
As O'Dwyer bursts through, can she get on her preferred left? She can, and she slotted it.
They certainly do. It's O'Dwyer.
Give it, give it.
The Irish woman, what a perfect start in Brisbane for Ollan O'Dwyer.
Plus, what better way to round off a historic week for Irish racing than with our own superhero, Jane Mangan.
Game on 2FM.
If you want to get in touch, please do so on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. And to quote Donegal O'Callaghan, we'd love to hear from you.
We'd love to.
We really would. So, Donegal, we've reached the stage now where we are signing regulations exempting elite athletes from the requirement to quarantine in a hotel into law. So that's the stage that we're at. So these exemptions will be made on a case-by-case basis for athletes who will apply through their governing bodies to Sport Ireland. So athletes who arrive from so-called level 2 countries on the mandatory hotel quarantine list will still have to undertake a period of isolation in a hotel or other designated facility. So each exemption will be certified by Sport Ireland in consultation with the HSE. So basically, you have to have a plan. And if you have a plan, you can present that through your governing body. And then that will be decided on a case by case basis. Lucky enough, the France match is already sorted. So they will definitely be here to play Ireland tomorrow. But there is a lot to it. It is complicated. We're going to hear now from John Tracy, the CEO of Sport Ireland, just to get some reaction from him to this.
Well, it's very good news for sport, and we're very grateful to Minister Chambers and Minister Martin for delivering this for sport. And what it means is practically the French rugby team are coming tonight, and they're going to be in the match tomorrow and can leave the country. So elite sport can continue to progress. What it really means for our Olympiad athletes, our Paralympic athletes, is they can go to competitions in Category 2 countries where they need to go to compete, to qualify for the Olympics or the Paralympic Games. They can go and compete and get their qualification and then come back to Ireland and quarantine in a hotel, but train at the same time for the next competition. That's really what it means.
So that's John Tracy, the CEO of Sport Ireland, speaking there and explaining, I guess, what the direct impact of this new law means for our Irish athletes. And it is going to be a very busy time for them. So to have that probably will mean a lot of relief.
Absolutely. And I think he's dead right when he speaks on behalf of all sports that they're incredibly grateful. This is something that we know as sports people we're privileged to do. If you just listen to the news, you hear of other extreme cases. So I don't think there will be anyone within sports that would take it for granted or that wouldn't put a robust process in place. And I can tell you one thing, Marie, one thing sports people love is a bit of a process. Everyone be in the same gear, everyone meet on the bus at this time and head out, play in Ireland, get back on the flight and get back out. So hopefully we can keep to a bit of that while giving our athletes the opportunity. And not only that, like, I'm living to watch the Ireland-France game tomorrow. So I know it's important for the game and the girls to play, but just for supporters as well to have something to, you know, lift the joy.
Yeah, definitely, because I think especially that Ireland women's rugby team have had it really difficult with the amount of cancellations and postponements and all the rest. So it is good for them to have it. But look, as you said, Donegal, it's really important that people now do what they're supposed to do, that they do the right thing and that there is nobody straying outside these guidelines, because athletes and sports people are in a very privileged position. They get to go and do what they love. They get to go out and train. They get to be in a social situation within a bubble and to go out and play and do what they love. And lots of people would love to be in that same situation. So
absolutely. And look, we're not saying, you know, they're not in, we've seen mistakes before. You look at the French senior rugby team and they made the mistake, went out and for waffles in Italy and it nearly cost the whole Six Nations. So they got to realise it is a privilege, it is an honour, and they need to not only deliver on the pitch but make sure that they don't put anyone else in danger, which I'm sure they will.
Yep. Big game tomorrow. I think we're all really looking forward to it. It's been bubbling away nicely all through the week. Ireland captain Ciara Griffin was in front of the media today for the captain's run, and it was interesting to hear her say that they have some homework done on the French, but they really are keeping their focus on what Ireland can do. Let's hear from her.
We love this surface. We love the scene. Really sense of pride when you get to run out here across that whitewash, and although it's going to be slightly different to other times here with no crowds, we just can't wait to get onto that pitch. Preparation has gone well for us in terms of your analysis, looking at our own game, finding areas for us to improve on for the weekend, which is great. That's what you want. Good training session yesterday. Obviously, the French are a good side and we've done our homework on that, but we're focusing on us and everything we can put into this jersey.
Donica, is that true? Do they just focus on themselves, or are they trying to disrupt what France are doing?
No, I believe they will. Of course, they'll target things, and we've heard during the week that they'll try to make them ruck more, put them on the ground. France are lethal if you make them offload or leave them offload, Marie. But that's an awful thing to say. Maybe it's just perception. But if you make them overwork, if you keep putting them on the ground, so like even small things, when you're playing against a French team, you'd even be pushing them over to make them do down and ups. Just make it really tough as possible. But what I love what Junior was saying there is about energy or park, and it's weird that it's empty, but it's still a brilliant stadium. It's terrace, it's, you know, it just has got all the feel of it, and it's a fast track, and especially with our back three, with our backs all, you know, actually with our whole team at the moment, the influence of sevens, having a hard track and this time of the year, we should well be able to throw the ball around.
Did you just call Ciara Griffin by her nickname?
I know, and I haven't even earned the right yet. I need to check that. Am I okay
with that? I thought
that
was just limited to when you play with somebody or you know them really well.
You have to get the blessing. So, Ciara, I'm sorry, I haven't got the blessing yet, but hopefully in time.
Now, the sport
what
is...
What a weekend for the Mrs. Considine, like.
Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. So, actually, last year when the AFL final, women's final was on, and Ailish was involved, she went over there and surprised her, and it was brilliant, and there was loads of great videos. But to have two daughters playing at the top level, one representing their country on the national stage, and another one on the international stage. It's just mind-blowing, really, isn't it?
It's incredible. Like, we're lucky enough to be parents, but could you imagine that? Could you imagine tomorrow for her? And I was reading Ailish's, she does a brilliant article on RT.ie, just reading it today about her mum lighting nightlights. Could you imagine the amount she's going to have to light for the... And just, the crossover in sports, you know? It's just, it's incredible, an unbelievably talented family, and it would be great if...
Everybody wins.
Everyone wins.
Now, there is a lot of football on, and it's starting right now. It's actually underway. So Waterford are playing Bohemians at the RSC, and John Kenny is there for us. John.
Yeah, no goals so far in this game, which is a 5:45 kickoff. Best of the chances falling to the Wayside, who are looking for their second away victory of the season. In fact, their second victory of the season, having had a decent victory up at Dundalk last week. Tyreek Wilson's free kick almost caught Paul Martin, the Blues goalkeeper. He's in today for the injured Brian Murphy, but he saved well at his near post. Liam Burt's shot was pushed over his own crossbar by Dara Power, and then Keith Ward brought out a good save from Martin, who started well between the sticks. He's actually playing today with John Martin, his brother, on that team. Three changes for the Waterford team that lost up at Finn Harps as well. Dara Murphy, the veteran, is starting in place of Prince Musungama. And Isaac Shipamba is in for Shane Griffin. As I mentioned, Brian Murphy out. Paul Martin is in his stead. Bohemians have got Andy Lyons out of their squad. Rory Feely, the former Blues man, starts alongside Rob Cornwall in the centre of defence, and James Finnerty. And Tyreek Wilson and Ali Coote are also former Blues. They were here at the RSC last year. So three players who were formerly with Waterford are starting today against their old team. I suppose... It's a chance for Waterford to get their first home win of the season, but so far, with 22 minutes gone on the clock, it remains at 0-0.
Thanks so much, John Kenny. Now, there are other games on tonight as well, and Alan Cawley is up at the Dundalk St. Pat's game for us. Alan?
I'm not, Marie. I'm actually in the Brandywell, Derry, Andrada.
Brilliant. You're all over the place. You could be ever-present, Cawley.
I know I'd love to be at the Pats and Dundalk game as well, but that's not till tomorrow
that's
night,
tomorrow,
Marie. So give me a chance.
Of course it is.
No, I'm up in the Brandywell, Maria. So Derry and Drogheda, the live game on the telly tonight. And Derry, I suppose the story going into this one is Derry haven't got any points on the board so far this season. They've lost their first four matches. So Declan Devine is certainly under a bit of pressure. And Drogheda, on the other hand, have had a great start. They've picked up 7 points out of 12. So they'll come here obviously full of confidence. And hoping that they can take another scalp in the Premier Division.
Alan, there's pressure now on teams to get results, though, isn't there? It's that point of the season, you know, that early on there's a mix in the league, but now you really do have to be getting away from the bottom.
Yeah, definitely, Dunnock. I think after, normally we usually say after maybe 6 or 7 games, you can see the table kind of settling down into a bit of a pattern. So it's still early days as such, but the fact that Derry have lost their first four, that brings its own pressures, and they had a poor enough season last year as well. So Declan Devine is under no illusions, just the pressure that he's under at the moment, and he'll be desperate to pick up, I think, a victory tonight, not just a point, especially against the team Drogheda, who have just been promoted. Albeit, though, Drogheda have had a very good start, Dunnock, and they're a good side. Tim Clancy, a young up-and-coming manager, and his team reflects him as well in the fact that they're young and fearless to go out and attack. They've scored 7 goals in their 4 matches already as well, the most in the Premier League. So they will fancy their chances. So it's an interesting game from both sides of the angle, I suppose, in terms of Derry desperate for points and Drogheda looking to continue the good start.
Now, Alan, we can talk about the game that I clearly want to talk about, Dundalk and St. Pat's. And I've been quite interested in it all day because there is a lot of news coming out about what is going on at Dundalk, how long the management team are going to last for, that there's team meetings going on, that there's training sessions, that there's rallying cries on, that there's a lot happening that people aren't expecting up there.
Yeah, you're right, Marie. There's so much noise going around with Dundalk at the moment. And I suppose it's been going around since the start of the season, or really since the start, if you go back to that press conference that they held when they notified everybody that Shane Keegan will now be the manager, and they were phrasing it as a management committee that they'll all be kind of chipping in with their say. But that's all good and well if you're getting results, but as soon as you're not getting results, then the chat starts in terms of who's managing, who's in charge. And at the moment, it's a bit of a shambles, Marie. Like we saw last week in the game against Bohemians, Filippo Giovignoli shouting down from the stand to make substitutions, Keegan shouting back up at him. It just looks, the optics of it just doesn't look right. And that's the players then are getting mixed messages in terms of who's in charge, because we've all played sport and we all know you need one voice and one kind of leader as such, or your manager. You can't have 3 or 4 chipping in, because as I say, it reflects bad then on the players in terms of the mixed messages that they're getting. And I think that's why the performances have been so indifferent and so poor. And they are under serious pressure, the management team or whatever you want to call them. And they're going up against the St. Pat's team who are top of the league and flying high, 10 points out of 12. A former player, Stevie O'Donnell, a bit of a legend in Dundalk and what he achieved up there. And Stevie will certainly be licking his lips going up to Dundalk tomorrow night, because he'll fancy his chances of getting another 3 points.
Alan, mixed messages aside, setting kind of targets of, you know, for the next 3 games that they need 7 points, that's tough on a whole squad, isn't it?
Definitely, yeah. I think, I don't think that the form that they're in, Dunnock, I don't think you can look too far or look too much further than the next game. And the next game is so important, because as we've just touched on, if they don't get a result tomorrow night, those managers or those people, whoever in charge, they might not be in charge come midweek or come next Friday. So they just have to concentrate on the game tomorrow, put in a performance, hopefully get a result. They were actually quite good in the game against Shamrock Rovers in the second half, but whatever happened last week, they were back to what they've showed in the previous 2 games, and Bohemians beat them comprehensively, even though it was only 1-0, but they were fairly comfortable throughout. And it's a shame, really, because we've loved the Dundalk story over the last number of years, but it's certainly not going according to plan at the moment, and it looks like it might fall flat in its face.
Alan, they do have good players, though, and they did retain quite a lot. And when you think of the spine of the team that they have, why aren't they performing, Alan? Is it just down to what's going on behind the scenes, do you think?
I would think so, Marie, because you're right, they do have a good squad, and they have a good squad of players and a lot of experience amongst that. They have changed it up and brought in some new lads, but there's still enough quality amongst that squad to be picking up results. Maybe not to be winning the league, but I saw them in the President's Cup at the start of the season, and I thought they were actually looked quite good, and I thought they'd be competitive in terms of challenging Shamrock Rovers. Now, they just have got off to the worst possible start. You can rectify that, of course you can, it's only 4 games in, but going on the form, and particularly going on by what's off the pitch, Marie, as I say, that doesn't fill you with confidence whatsoever, the mixed messages that's going around in terms of who's the manager, who's not the manager, who's the coach, who's the management committee, this kind of stuff. It's quite new in our league, and it's certainly not working. It's absolutely 100% not working what's going on there at the moment.
It's coming into a busy time, and we know Shamrock Rovers taking on Longford. Longford are playing two fixtures within the space of 4 days, so getting results at this point, Alan, is important.
And these are the games, Donegal, the quick succession of games like that, they're the ones that's going to catch out the teams like Longford and maybe even draw the lesser teams that don't have the bigger squads. The likes of Shamrock Rovers, Dundalk, Sligo Rovers, they can cater for two games in 4 days or 5 days or three games in a week that's coming up now. But the likes of Longford, especially as the season progresses as well and we get into the nitty-gritty of it, I know it's only early, but it still might catch them out. Two games in 4 days, and they're coming off the back of two defeats already the last couple of weeks, a heavy one last week to Drogheda, and I don't see things getting any better for them up in Tala on Saturday night. I think they're going to struggle bad. I think Shamrock Rovers will win that handy, to be honest.
And what about Sligo Rovers, Finn Harps? We're talking about teams that we probably thought would struggle, but Finn Harps are the ones that are surprising us all the time, and Sligo as well are being quite consistent.
Yeah, the Armoury and Sligo, to be fair, have got off to a brilliant start, and there's a lot of optimism around the place, and they've a much better team. Like, it's no coincidence you sign better players and you recruit better, all of a sudden you have the makings of a team, and that's exactly what's going on there at the moment. You add in the fact that, as I say, there's a lot of optimism around the place and there's a lot of confidence with the start that they've had, so it bodes well going forward for them. Finn Harps have been the surprise package. They're the ones that, as you say, everybody tipped to be down fighting relegation, but they've picked up 10 points out of 12, an unbelievable start. And if you go back to their last 10 games of last season as well, Marie, it was only Shamrock Rovers in those 10 games that beat them. So they've carried a really strong end to last season into this season as well, and it's been reflected so far in the performances. So that'll be a tough game to call. I think Sligo Rovers should edge it at home, but the fact that Finn Harps are in such good form, it'll be a close one.
Alan, brilliant weekend, and there's a full round of fixtures as well in the first division. How do you think that'll go at Athlone looking to extend their run at the top there away to Bray Wanderers?
Yeah, there's something similar in the first division in the fact that the teams that we predicted to be at the top are not at the top, and Shelburne only got their first win last week, winning 1-0, and they made hard work of it. Galway's game was called off against Cavan Teely, but it looks like they're going to get the walkover, which there's a bit of controversy going on over that with AMRs and Shelburne. But Athlone have been the surprise package, something like what we were saying, I suppose, with Finn Harps. They've had a great start. And Adrian Carberry signed a lot of players in the off-season, and he's done quite well in his recruitment because they've hit the ground running, and I think they might beat Brea at the weekend as well.
And in the Women's National League as well, we have a real mouth-watering one on our hands, Alan, with leader Shelburne taking on champions Peamount. And look, this clash has been brilliant over the years. There's been 53 goals since 2016 when the league started, and these two teams have played 15 times in the league, so they always deliver, Alan.
Absolutely, yeah, an absolute cracker, Marie. And these are the two that you would expect to be fighting it out come the end of the season. Shelburne have got off to a great start, picking up two wins, two away matches as well. And what was interesting when I looked at this fixture during the week, Marie, was the fact that this is their third away game. I'm not sure who's setting up the fixtures in the Women's National League, but Shelburne have had three away games now, when you count in this one with Peamount as well. So that's quite unusual. But they have picked up two away wins against that Athlone 2-0 and Cork 3-0. But Peamount are the team that everybody has to beat. There was a little bit of a break in a couple of weeks there with the international team playing, and they've only played one game so far, Peamount, but this should be an absolute cracker, Marie, and it'll be no surprise, you see, whoever comes out on top tomorrow, there'll be plenty more ding-dong battles when these meet towards the coming weeks in the season as well and towards the end, because these will be the two that'll be fighting it out.
Now, before we move on to the Premier League, I better reiterate that it is Derry City and Drogheda that is on tonight, and it is live on RTE2 and Watch LOI, and Alan Cawley is up there for RTE. Now, Alan, Manchester United last night, they looked pretty impressive, albeit against Granada.
Yeah, they played quite well. Over the two legs, they were very good, Marie, and I say it was quite comfortable in the end. And to be fair as well, if you go back to the game in between against Spurs, the second half in particular, it's probably the best I've seen them. They were very, very good. The question is now, can they just go on and win a trophy? I think Solskjaer, we've said this all along continually in the chats that we've had, that he needs a trophy. And I think the fact that they're in the semi-final now. They'll fancy their chances, albeit a tough game against Roma. But you look at the other side of the draw and Arsenal as well, and they will fancy their chances of going on to win it. And I think they should go on and win it. And I think he needs that, Solskjaer. If they were to finish second in the Premier League and go on and win the Europa League, the fans will take that. He'll have his summer. He might get a few more pounds to spend. And the question mark then is, will he go after Harry Kane and will they go all out to get him? And he could be the final piece of the jigsaw in terms of trying to win the league then next year, Marie.
Fergal Brennan is also with us on the line. Fergal, Paul Pogba is getting a lot of praise today just because he's starting to show some sort of will to be with Manchester United, and the captain's armband seems to be spurring him on to a new level.
He is, and I think you speak to anyone that watches Manchester United and particularly focuses on Paul Pogba on a regular basis, they'll tell you that this is the type of player that he is. When he's concentrated on his football, when the manager has him on board, when he wants to be performing, and when the team is moving in a positive direction, this is the type of player that he can be. I know there's obviously been controversy surrounding him and people calling for United to potentially sell him, but when you have a fit, confident, positive Paul Pogba in your team, he is one of the best in his position in the world. And I think at the moment, as Alan touched on, right at the moment with United, everything is in a sweet spot. They're winning games, they're potentially going to win a competition in Europe, they're almost certain to reach the Champions League for next season. They're not going to win the Premier League, but there's a massive move in the right direction, and Pogba, I think, does want to be a part of that. I don't think the ties that bind him to United are as strong as other players, but I also think that a lot of the talk surrounding him leaving or demanding a move away from United are exaggerated for the purpose of things that are not related to him.
Alan, you've been hard on Ollie over the course of the year, but we saw him learning as well. If you look at the Champions League game against PSG, where he didn't replace Fred, last night he did with Pogba. You know, there's a bit of learning as well going on from him.
Yeah, but Dunica, if you were in charge last night, you would have taken Pogba off as well. that was the obvious thing to do. But no, I have been hard on him, and I'll continue to be hard on him. He's the Man United manager, Dunica, and he needs to deliver. And up to now, I don't know kind of some of the things you would question. But to be fair, credit where credit's due. The last few months, really, he certainly has done a really good job. As Fergal said, they're not going to win the league, but I think they would have taken second at the start of the year because we all thought it would be Man City and Liverpool fighting out for the league title. So they'll definitely take second. And as I say, if they were to win the Europa League, and it's all about then the recruitment in the off season. If you have Pogba, who looks like he's happy to be there now, Bruno Fernandes, they look like they've settled back four. Obviously, Shaw's playing out of his skin. Harry Maguire has done quite well lately as well. Henderson could take over as the number one. It looks like he will also, and he has a bright future. So there is the makings of a team, but the final part of that jigsaw, I still think, is a centre-forward. Now, Cavani has been brilliant in the last few weeks, but unfortunately, they've gotten him at the wrong time in his career. They need to go out and get a Harry Kane or get a signing as big and as good as that, and that could be the final piece of the jigsaw. Then I'll be a little bit kinder to him.
And Fergal, they have to play Burnley this weekend as well. And when you think about Burnley and just how difficult they've been having it, and when Manchester United come up against teams like this who have been proved to be stubborn opposition, they don't always do as well as you'd expect them to do.
No, and that's kind of tagging on to what Alan was saying about Solskjaer. And United fans are hard on him for the reason that they're used to success and they're used to winning games and brushing the likes of Burnley to one side as they march on to win things and qualify for the big competitions. I think his record against the kind of so-called lesser teams, the bottom half teams, has improved in the last season. And I think given the situation that they're in now, I don't see any taking their foot off the gas. As I said, they're probably... I've already got top four ticked off, but just the mentality that Solskjaer seems to have instilled in them since the turn of the year is that we don't let up in this. The Granada game last night was an example of that. 2-0 from the first leg, they were probably home and dry, but they were hungry for it last night. 2-0 again, it could have been more, could have been three, could have been four. So I think they still want to keep making statements. They know that the league is gone, but they want to lay a marker down, moving into the summer and moving into next season, to say to City that if somebody is going to challenge you, it's going to be us. And Solskjaer, Alan is right, he's in an incredibly demanding position. He's manager of the most successful club in the history of the Premier League, but you have to give him credit in the fact that he's adapted, he's dealt with a lot of pressure, and now he's starting slowly to reap results.
Alan, one team that certainly hit their straps last night was Arsenal. They'll take on Fulham on Sunday. Do you think they'll rest up players, or is that an opportunity for Fulham? Were you impressed as well with Arsenal last night?
Yeah, but they're so inconsistent, Dunica. It was a great result for them last night, to be fair. And I, you know what kind of pleased me more was that situation before the match. I'm not sure if you saw with Lacazette taking the knee and the players in front of the Slavia Prague players, because there's been so much discussion around this at the moment. And for Slavia Prague to do what they did, I thought was a disgrace last night, on top of the fact that their player got banned, and rightly so. If anything, he should have got banned for a lot longer and a lot further, and UEFA and the likes need to be a lot harder in terms of their punishments to try and eradicate this from the game. But I was delighted with what Lacazette did and the players behind him, and then they went out and put on a performance as well. So that's what pleased me the most. In terms of Arsenal this season, they've been so inconsistent, and I still think the jury is out with Arteta. But again, going back to the point I was making about Solskjaer, he bought himself time last year, Arteta, by winning the FA Cup. Now he's in a semi-final again. And you look at the four teams that are left, anybody's capable of winning that Europa League, and he'd be going all guns blazing for that, because it's a route back into the Champions League, and it's the only route that they have. So he's in with an opportunity still, but the fact that they've been so inconsistent, I think it's been a pretty disappointing season so far for Arsenal.
But Fergal, it does feel like they're evolving a little bit. I know they're inconsistent, but you know, they're starting to figure out who the players are that they can depend on, whether it's Saka, Emile Smith-Rowe, Holding, Mari, Lacazette. Like, they really are starting to understand really what they need to do to be a good team.
Yeah, and I actually think the almost lack of pressure playing in the Europa League has benefited them. They know that when a result goes against them, or they don't perform in the way they're expected in the Premier League, the microscope is back on them, and questions are being asked of certain experienced players, or Arteta, is he the right man for the job? What's going on behind the scenes at Arsenal Football Club? But I think because the Europa League, in fairness to it, is seen as a sideshow to the Champions League, there's not as much attention on it until we get to quarter-final, semi-final stage. So they've been able to just chug along, be consistent. And it wasn't just last night against Slavia Prague. They've turned in some really, really good results, going back to Benfica and Olympiacos in the previous knockout round. So, as Alan said, it's an open competition now going into the last four. Villarreal that Arsenal will take on, and Roma for United will both be really difficult. Unai Emery going back to the Emirates will be a little bit of a subplot for Arsenal fans. But I think we've seen the best of Arsenal in Europe this season, and I think Champions League is definitely gone. Personally, I think looking at the numbers in the table, Europa League qualification is probably beyond them as well. So if they don't win this tournament, it's going to be no European football at Arsenal Football Club next season. I think Arteta knows that. He knows there's already questions being asked about him. If he doesn't have that shield of European football next season, he could have real problems.
And Alan, coming up against a team like Fulham, who really need the win, I think everybody knows how difficult that can be, because they're just going to be going after it.
Yeah, they're desperate for the points, Marie. And I looked about 3 or 4 weeks ago that maybe Fulham had a bit of momentum behind them, and that they have a great opportunity of getting out of it. And I certainly thought that, but the results in the last couple of weeks have obviously gone against them, and it looks like they're doomed, really. And Newcastle are picking up the odd point here and there. So again, it's an opportunity against Arsenal, because Dunica mentioned here, will he make changes? He probably will make changes, because it's all about going for the Europa League now for Arsenal. Because I agree with Fergal, even the Europa League, I think, is out of reach for them in terms of the league. So the only route that Arteta has for European football is to go and win the Europa League. And I think he might prioritise that come between now and the end of the season.
Fergal, it's a brilliant weekend. There's also FA Cup semi-finals, and Chelsea are taking on Man City. Can we start chatting about a quadruple after this weekend?
As long as you don't do it in front of Pep Guardiola. I've seen a few journalists getting their noses bitten off when they bring it up. We can, and I think it's been on the table for a few months now, even though people have whispered it, because there's always an expectation that they're going to stumble or a result will go against them. But I just think when you look at the pressurised situations they've found themselves in the last few weeks, they've answered pretty much every question. Aside from the defeat in the derby to United, every time there's looked like something could go wrong or someone could, you know, dangle a leg and trip them up, they've got past it, including the Dortmund game in midweek, where it was difficult for them, but they, again, just found a way to win the game. And when you look at the fixtures between now and the end of the season, the league title, I think, is sewn up for them. This could be the last chance for them to stumble, because whether it's Leicester or Southampton in the final, you'd imagine they would beat them you fancy them to power on to at least the final in the Champions League. So this, despite the fact that it might not be the most glamorous game on paper, when you look at some of the Premier League options for the race for top four, this is possibly the last chance any team will have to pull Guardiola back. Certainly for the treble anyway, maybe not necessarily for the quadruple.
Anyone who isn't supporting Manchester City will be hoping that Chelsea can try and get the win anyway, because the quadruple is a very hard word to listen to all the time. And Alan, Leicester Southampton, how does Brendan Rodgers approach a game like this when he has obviously so much going on in the Premier League and the importance there, but at the same time, winning a cup is always nice?
Yeah, and I think it would be important for them as well to try and go and win the cup. They've had a brilliant season. I know they had a bad result last weekend, but I really hope that they finish in the top four, because I think they've deserved it. And of course, the only question mark around them is the fact that last year when they stumbled and they fell out of the top four, that I hope that doesn't happen again this time, because I think they deserve the top four. It is getting tight now with West Ham breathing down their necks, obviously, in Chelsea, so it's going to make for an interesting finish come the last few weeks of the season. But I'd love to see them go on and win the FA Cup. I think they'll beat Southampton. They're a better team than Southampton. He dealt with a really important issue last week as well. There was a bit of trouble with three or four of the players, Madison and Chowdhury, but I think he dealt with it really, really well and kept it in-house. And they're all back in the squad now for the game, for the semi-final. So I think they will beat Southampton, and I hope to get the top four. And if they do get to the final as well, Marie, I know you're talking about the quadruple, and Man City have a great chance, or if Chelsea gets one. But I think Leicester will give either of them a game in the FA Cup final as well. So that'll be certainly one to watch in the coming weeks.
Sorry, Fergal, I'm losing train of thought. Big game tonight, Everton taking on Spurs. Must win for both teams if they're trying to make top four.
Yeah, I think these teams both find themselves in a similar situation where the momentum has gone out with them a little bit in the last month. Definitely Everton, I think they maybe have had their eye on the Europa League a bit more than the top four since 2021. But obviously, Mourinho with Spurs, there's always the pressure for them to be in the Champions League. I think this is actually probably decisive for either of them. I think whoever wins tonight could potentially end the other one's chances of being in European competition next season. That's how big it is. And it's a difficult one to call, but we chatted about Mourinho last weekend ahead of the United game, and this idea that he can still do it and he still has the glint in his eye, I don't necessarily buy into. I think that was shown in the way that he couldn't react to the changes that Solskjaer made, and they obviously lost last weekend. But Everton, again, for me, I don't think they look to have consistency. It's a similar situation with Arsenal. Impressive performances every third or fourth week, but then they'll drop silly points somewhere and they'll just bow out.
Right, well, we're going to say goodbye now to Fergal and Alan, because there is some action down at the RSC and John Kenny is there for us. John?
Yeah, we're into injury time, Ian. Bohemians have taken the lead. It came in the 43rd minute and they've had the best of the play so far, so maybe it warrants a goal. Rob Cornwall tapping into the net. Tyreek Wilson has come back to haunt his old side. An excellent free kick out on the right-hand side, up and over the wall. Paul Martin in goal for the injured Brian Murphy today. Was so unlucky. He got his hand to the ball, pushed it out to the crossbar, but it didn't bounce away to safety. Sadly, from the Blues' point of view, it fell nicely for Rob Cornwall, and he tapped it to the empty net. We've got 1 minute of added time, and we're into that now here at the RSC, where it stands Waterford 0, Bohemians 1.
Thanks, John. We're going to take a very quick break.
2FM. Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Dangerous position. Sock it off the deck. He's good. Eilish Considine gets the opening goal. He's fourth again. Handball over the top. Considine for two in 2 minutes.
As O'Dwyer bursts through, can she get on her preferred left? She can, and she slotted it.
They certainly do. It's O'Dwyer.
Oh, give it.
The Irish woman. What a perfect start in Brisbane for Ola O'Dwyer.
Now, and then there were two. So for the last few months, we have been covering the AFLW, and it's been fantastic to see so many Irish women lighting it up down there. And now we are at the final stage. So the Adelaide Crows and the Brisbane Lions will meet tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. And TG Carr are going to be showing that live on their YouTube channel with Ashley McCarthy and Cora Staunton on the coverage. So they will be able to give us great insight on what the two teams are up to. We have two two Irish women playing in tomorrow's final, Ailish Considine with the Adelaide Crows and Orla O'Dwyer with the Brisbane Lions. So by tomorrow morning, when we are all awake, one of these Irish women will be part of a winning team. And I have to say, I am delighted that Emma Duffy is with us now on the line to preview this game. Emma.
Marie, how are things? How are you keeping?
I'm excited, I have to say. The alarm is set. How are you?
I'm good, yeah. Very, very excited. I think that nice little montage of the commentary, certainly whets the appetite. It should be a good one. And I suppose, yeah, you know, you were saying there, we're down from 14 Irish players on the books at club to final two down in Australia. So it's just fantastic that we're going to have an Irish champion. Obviously, Ailish Considine has already won from 2019. So will she make it two titles, or will Orla pop up and get her name into the history books there too? So yeah, it's all go 5 a.m. The alarm will be set and it should be a good one.
Emma, that's a beautiful thing about it. It's a grand final in Aussie rules, but it really is Clare versus Tip, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, Donica. It's a Munster final down under. I suppose it really makes up for the lack of Gaelic games the last while. And, you know, the two girls obviously know each other very well. They went to UL together, played Camogie football together, and have obviously met numerous times on the intercounty scene. So, yeah, they're no strangers to one another. So it should be good. But I suppose, yeah, once the battle lines are drawn, they'll go from friends to enemies for whatever time it is, and really looking forward to seeing them in action.
So Ailish Considine has had a bit of a journey this year with the Adelaide Crows. She obviously won last year and she was a big part of their team, but it didn't go to plan for her until now. Can you tell us about her journey, Emma?
Yeah, I suppose it's been pretty much a roller coaster for Ailish. I think I saw her describe it as a series of unfortunate events. But here she is, included in the team selection for Grand Final Day, which is massive. And it's off the back of a bit of misfortune. Adelaide Crows, their captain, Chelsea Randall, sustained a concussion last weekend, so Ailish got the call-up. But it was actually a concussion, I suppose, that derailed Ailish's season in round two, and nasty one kept her out for a few weeks. And then, obviously, the competitive nature of the team, it was tough to get her players back. She was in and out with the squad a little bit. And then, recently, she actually was out for a run. I was reading the last few days, out for a run in a park, and got bitten by a dog, so that kept her out for another week. But look, against all odds, she's back in the mix. She's on the interchange bench for the morning, and we'll see her feature, and I'm sure Ailish will be hoping to repeat the feat of 2019 and kick a goal in the grand final. Orla's path has been a little bit more straightforward, but look, anything can happen on final day, and I think Adelaide are probably going in as favourites, but as I say, anything can happen, and I suppose it's Brisbane's third time, I think, in the final, and it will be third time lucky if they do the business. But Adelaide are probably favourites. They're going for their third grand final win in three appearances, so it's a pretty nice record.
It really is. And so tell us about Ailish then. Just what type of player is she?
Yeah, I suppose this is Ailish's third year in the AFLW. It's probably her hardest one to date, obviously, as I mentioned, the challenges she's had to overcome. She's a really talented Gaelic footballer and Camogie player, and obviously those skills are really transferable into the Australian game. And she kind of hit the ground running, I suppose, in her debut season in 2018, and then continued that form, or in 2019, sorry, when she won the grand final with Adelaide, and continued that form in 2020. And this season has been a little bit more tough. But yeah, I suppose, like all the Irish girls, their skills can be really seen, and their athleticism definitely, albeit the game here is amateur, they really mix it up with the semi-pros and the professionals in Australia. And then, yeah, I suppose Orla then, she is, like Ailish, very athletic, and anyone that knows anything about ladies football or come over here will know the name Orla O'Dwyer. You know, I think this season she's really set her stall out, and she cut her intercounty commitment short to go to Australia and to get a full pre-season under her belt, and that really paid dividends. You know, she's had her best season to date. On the wing, I think I was speaking to CrossCoders co-founder Jason Hill, and he said that the wing is probably the hardest position to play in AFLW. A lot of Irish girls go into the half-backs or half-forwards, where we'll see Ailish hopefully tomorrow. But Orla has kind of made that wing position her home, and you know, she's shown so much improvement this year. She's come on in leaps and bounds and really established herself as a key player for Brisbane.
Emma, because we talk about that the whole time as players making sacrifices, but to leave, you know, Tipperary in the middle of an inter-county season, these are the reasons she did it, to play in big grand finals.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's completely paid off, and I suppose that's the same with Ailish as well. She hasn't played a whole pile of inter-county football since making the move to Australia, and I think, I suppose, giving it that 100% focus has really paid off for both of these players and for some of the other Irish girls too. And like, it really is the opportunity of a lifetime, and you can't begrudge them for taking it. You know, anyone would want to take it. It's a massive opportunity to just be involved in a semi-professional environment and kind of live that life that you wouldn't get the chance to do so at home. And you know, here there, I think it's just fantastic that this is their adopted sport. And look, for Orla, it's her third sport at the highest level possible. And here they are on the other side of the world, flying the flag on the biggest stage possible. I just think it's phenomenal, and it's something they should be really proud of, and we should be really proud of too, watching from here.
How do you think the experiment has gone? Because initially that's what it was, really, when you think about it, when the girls started going over there. But like, as you said now, they're not just over there making up the numbers, Emma. They are really making their mark.
Absolutely, and that's something that Jason Hill has said through the year in some of our previews with the 42, that, you know, these aren't just making up the numbers. They're some of the best players in the league, and that's just testament to, I suppose, how far ladies football has come on these shores. I think it's gone very well, and probably it's exceeded any expectations that were had beforehand. And you know, when obviously Laura Corrigan-Duray from Cavan was the first Irish player to play in 2017, but she had been in Australia for quite a while, had played state level football, but then the big thing was obviously Cora crossing codes the following year, and all those who have followed suit. And we've seen it's been a huge success. I don't know if it's going to continue. It's an interesting one, because obviously the league's going to expand in Australia. There'll probably be an overlap between the seasons. Players will have to choose. You know, Australian clubs want them on longer term contracts, and things will probably turn into the way the men's game has gone with the AFL. But I think it's been a really interesting few years, and I suppose, you know, the girls coming back to play in Ireland have brought loads of insights and experiences with them, and that's just brought on the game here too.
I'd imagine as well, just over there, that as the game is growing, they're going to start developing their own players as well, and the standards are going to improve, and there's going to be academies and nurseries, and there's going to be pathways now, and it might not be as easy really to get over.
Yeah, definitely. That's a big thing too, Marie, because I suppose the fact that it was the inaugural season in 2017, you know, there wasn't that big of a player pool. So teams had to look elsewhere, and that's where the whole kind of Irish experiment came into it, I guess. But now, you know, underage structures have developed. There's a lot more players coming through. They want more home base and domestic players, I guess. So they won't be looking as further afield, I don't think. Obviously, with organisations like Cross Coders, and the likes of the combines and things like that, there will still be opportunities, but I just don't think it will be as common, because, you know, they're going to want to cultivate their own and to develop from there.
We're seeing that a little bit with Niamh McIver coming home. It's, you know, obviously having the opportunity is great, but it's good news for Dublin that she's coming back.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose Niamh has obviously had two good seasons at Melbourne. This season probably wasn't just as successful as last. She probably didn't get as much game time as she would have wanted with the AFLW team. She played a little bit of second tier with the Casey Demons and the VFL, and seemed to impress there by all accounts. But I suppose, yeah, Dublin would be happy just to have her 100% focus back with them, I guess. And I'd imagine, you know, Niamh really enjoyed her time at Melbourne and learned a lot and experienced a lot that she'll take back here. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see now over the next 2 weeks what happens with other players. I suppose I thought it was really interesting today. Normally, you know, they just delist a player or announce that they're leaving the club. But the fact that there was a deal made about an AFL retirement is probably, you know, something that's come over a little bit from the men's game. You know, what we saw with Conor McKenna, Conor Glass and the likes. You know, it was retirement for them too. But it'll be interesting to see what happens then over the next few weeks with the Irish girls, whether, you know, a lot of them stay or go. I know a few of them are on 2-year contracts. Others, you know, it'll be decision time. And obviously all the problems of COVID and whatnot, it'll be interesting to see what happens next year. But I think the entire focus right now is obviously on tomorrow morning on 5 a.m. and on Éilis Considine and Orla O'Dwyer going at it for the Premiership title. So it should be massive.
It will be interesting as well, I think, Emma, when they do come back, just like watching them and over the last few months, which has been brilliant to have that opportunity to do so on TG Cahir, and seeing the shape they're in and how fit they are and just the athletes that they became was fascinating. So to see them all, so many of them now slot in back to their teams this summer, I think it's going to add to it.
Yeah, it definitely will. You know, we've seen it every year, but I think probably this year in particular, you know, when a lot of other intercounty players are trying to think outside the box and train on their own and do all the little bits that they could, these girls are obviously living it up in Australia, living like a professional, and, you know, focusing on their sport full time. So they'll be huge, huge advantages now coming into the next few months. And it will be interesting, obviously, to see how they've come on. You know, there's obviously lots of similarities between the two games and things that can be transferred between them both. And then, yeah, as I say, the athleticism, I think there's so much focus, obviously, in Australia on strength and conditioning side of things, and that can only bring things on here too.
So tomorrow morning, 4:45 a.m. is TG Cahir's coverage with Cora Staunton and Aisling McCarthy. I'm actually really looking forward to hearing from Cora and just seeing her on the YouTube channel, because she's had such a good season. Like, despite her team not going as far as she would have liked them to, she's been a real standout player.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, named on the AFLW Team of the Year at the age of 39. Incredible the amount of goals she kicked. You know, she's only getting better, and there's no sign of her ever slowing down. But yeah, as you say, Cora, Aisling McCarthy, I think Mairead Sioga could be on as well. They'll all have nice little insights, and you know, they're kind of the experts on the game at this stage. For the rest of us trying to, you know, pick things up as we go, they've obviously been stuck in the thick of it all, so they know exactly what everything that's going on in the games, and you know, some of the rules that we mightn't be as familiar with, they'll be able to explain them a little bit better. So really interested to see how it all unfolds, and obviously TG Cahir's coverage has been fantastic. Really delighted to see it's going to be on their YouTube, and you know, we won't be either trying to get up and look at the AFLW app or trying to hide from everything until 5 o'clock in the evening. But yeah, their coverage should be fantastic. I saw the two videos they did with Ailish's mother Kay and then with Orla's mother Mary. I thought they were really brilliant, and it kind of just sets things up nicely for tomorrow morning.
Tony, could you hear that? 39 and only getting better?
Oh, wow. I heard that you were chatting to Kay. I'm more interested in that. My nerves are gone for up at 4:30 getting ready and then watching, you know, Emer and Energy in Park later in the afternoon. What a day.
It's insane.
Who else has impressed out there, Emma? Like, in terms of, we know Cora, but we expect that from her, not being harsh. Every time or anything she does, it's brilliant. But who, you know, you've been following it over the course of this season. Who has really kind of crossed over and done a great job of it?
Well, I think I'd have to give a shout out to my own county woman in Aisling Sheridan. I think she had a fantastic season this year with Collingwood. I would have played a good bit of football with Aisling when we were younger growing up, so it's fantastic to see her just doing so well over there and taking it all in her stride. You know, her first season, obviously a lot of teasing things for a lot of players, but this year she just really hit the ground running. You know, she was kicking goals every single week and best on the ground nearly every week too. So definitely, yeah, Aisling Sheridan had a fantastic year. And then obviously ably assisted by Sarah O from Mayo. The two of them were a bit of a double act for Collingwood, and they were unlucky last weekend not to make it to the grand final, actually. So yeah, Aisling, I think, definitely deserves a mention for a big season. But yeah, you could name any of them, Donafield. Like, they're all fantastic this year. I suppose Aisling McCarthy and the Kelly sisters at West Coast Eagles. Obviously West Coast are only a new team and kind of coming through developmental phases, but they've really kind of formed the backbone of that team. Aisling was unlucky to pick up a knee injury in the closing stages, I guess. But you know, when we saw her, she really tore it up. And the same with the two Kelly sisters, Niamh and Grace, they've just kind of taken to the game like duck to water. And I think they're all on longer term contracts. So please God, we'll see them again next year.
OK, Emma Duffy, enjoy tomorrow, 5 a.m. You'll be up bright and bushy tailed, no doubt. Looking forward to reading your report and all the updates. Thanks so much for joining us. We're going to take a very quick break.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Farm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillets, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It's time to put our focus on to racing, and we're delighted to be joined by Jane Mangan. Jane, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Jane, it's rare that, you know, with the sport, we kind of move on week to week, but we need to touch on last week. It was just incredible, and it's just gaining momentum what Rachel did. I read your piece today in The Echo, and, you know, I just thought it was lovely sentiments. You were saying that there's occasions in your life that you recognise at the present moment, you'll remember exactly what has happened for the rest of your days. And I think it was a remarkable thing, and it was just incredible, but it's also, it's not going away.
No, I suppose the whole thing, to put it into perspective, the Grand National is always a game changer. It is the biggest race in the world, but it isn't until you see the likes of Ringo Starr and Billie Jean King sending out their messages on Twitter that you know the reach that this race has. And I just remember feeling post-race that maybe the house I was in didn't really, the emotion wasn't the same level of what was in my body. So I rang my granny, who's in her 90s, and I said, "Do you know, did you ever think you would see the day?" And she honestly answered like it wouldn't have even crossed her mind 20 years ago that it was possible. Then a few girls came along and, you know, they rode in the race. But this, it was just out of this world fantastic. Not for just for racing, but for women in all sport. When you ask yourself, outside of equitation sports, how many sports offer equal opportunity to both genders and offer equal pay? The second being very important, because not only do we give equal coverage, because obviously we're riding in the same races, but the coverage of other sports is not the same and it's not equal. And I think it's something that racing and all equitation sports have to be very proud of.
Very much so. And Jane, you mentioned your granny been 90 and her not thinking that she'd ever see the day. You're not 90. Did you ever think you'd see the day?
I did, to be honest. Yeah, I knew if Anina Carberry or Katie Walsh was given the horse that was good enough to ride, they would win the National. It's just to get yourself in the position to ride for a Henry de Bromhead or to ride a horse good enough to win the National. And Rachel's work has got her to where she is today, to ride consistently grade one horses in grade one races. Hence, you end up with six winners at the end of a Cheltenham Festival. But the real poignant part of it is I'm just delighted for everyone in racing that it is somebody of Rachel's quality that has won it, because we know this success isn't going to change her. She's not going to get carried away. This is back at Ballinrobe today. That kind of work ethic is still in her. So I think it's not only a momentous occasion that a woman has won the Grand National, but if somebody's quality as a person, as Rachel Blackmore, is outstanding.
Yeah, hear, hear. Jane, we move on. The Curragh tomorrow, and there's plenty of action. 8 races on the card. Joseph O'Brien has a lot of interest.
He does, yeah. Look, this is... It's definitely an adjustment. I remember going to Leopardstown last Sunday after Aintree and I was having to readjust my lenses in my head. And I'm going to the Curragh tomorrow. There's two stakes races. There's two group threes. The first of them are probably the main race is the alleged stakes. Two years ago, Magical won this race. 3 years ago, Capri won this race. Do I think there's a horse of their standard in the race? Probably not. But the horse they all have to beat comes from the same camp, and that is Broom. During his 3-year-old year, he won the Ballysacks and he won the Derrenstown Derby trial. And then he went to Epsom and he was 4th behind Anthony Van Dyck. He ran twice last year as a 4-year-old. It was, I think it's fair to say, an abysmal 2 runs. And when we saw him last time on his seasonal debut at Nace, he absolutely bolted up. So I think he's the horse they have to beat in the alleged stakes. And in the Gladness Stakes, the third race on the card, the Group 3, Johnny Murta has a very smart filly. We knew last year Champs-Élysées was special, but Know-It-All was not far off her when she was 4th in the Matron last year at Leopardstown on Irish Champions Weekend. The same filly won the Derrenstown Filly Stakes at Leopardstown and was 3rd in the Prix Rothschild, a Group 1 in France. a funny feeling. She's a very big, physically very big filly. And I think as a four-year-old, know-it-all could come into her own. And I'm hoping she could start the season running in the Gladden Stakes this weekend.
Well, Ruby Walton must be listening to us because he's after texting to say that Rachel had a winner today. So there you go. I know she is racing already. So Scotland, Jane, we don't have a huge amount of time, but will you give us a very quick overview?
Yes, the Scottish Champion Hurdle. This meeting was lost last year and they're back with a run this year and there's plenty of Irish interest. Anna Bonina in the Scottish Champion Hurdle for John McConnell. Not without her chance. We last saw her perhaps a shade disappointing in the County Hurdle behind Belfast Banter and Petit Mouchoir. But against Diego de Charmille and co, I think she is worth her chance. And in the Scottish National, Danny Mullins and Pat Fahey team up with Mr. Fog Patches. Last seen when he was fourth at the Dublin Racing Festival in a chase where Live, Love, Laugh was second behind Machuca. That form is working out pretty well, and with the likes of Eyewright and Vintage Clouds after very hard races at the Cheltenham Festival, just watch down the bottom, number 20, Mr. Fog Patches for Danny Mullins and Pat Fahey.
Jim, we are tight on time, but there was sad news today about presenting Percy.
Yes, look, he had been fighting an infection. It emerged, his owner basically revealed to the public that he had been fighting an infection and he has lost that fight. He was an 11-time winner. He was twice a winner at the Cheltenham Festival and his pièce de résistance will be when he beat Mona Lee by 7 lengths in the RSA Chase in 2018. He was rated in the high 160s, nearly 170. There's no question he was a horse of the top drawer and it is a sad horse. He's only 10 years of age. He hadn't that many miles in the clock and it's a sad end for a horse that would have had a wonderful retirement had they been able to save him.
Yeah, absolutely. Jane, as always, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy the Curragh and we'll catch up with you next week. That's all from myself and Marie. We're back Monday at 6. A massive thank you to Ronan and Laura Lee. The awesome Blondie Tracy is up next with the official chart show.